မာရဒိုက်ကစင်ညမဒေလာဒါဟွန်ဒီမိတဘတန်ဟွန်ဂျူကြီးချွေမိတဘကုံချာတန်ဟွန်ဂျူကြီးတညမ်လင်းတန်ဘောချီပြီးကပ်တယ်တန်ဘောတယ်တာကုံမြတ်ဒီမိတဘကုံမြတ်ဆိုရချီအင်းဇာမိတဘကုံပိုင်နာမိတဘကုံဘလို့ဒီရဘစ်ကျဲဝိုင်နာအန်အဂျီကြီးချွေချဲလာကံကရောမာတယ်အနေဒီဘပွားရကံကရောမာတယ်ဒီနေ့အဂျီကဒီနေ့ဒီချဲလေရအနေအဂျီကကျာရှုစင်တဲ့ညီကျတာကျာရှုစင်ကြရလာကံကရုံပါတယ်ဆရာလေဒါကျာရှုစင်တဲ့ညီကျတီကြည့်သူပဲနာအဲ့နဲ့စင်ကြရဲ့ဒွင်းကျပါလားကံကထိပါတယ်ကံကကျဲကျချင်မရှိဘူးကြည့်သူကလေးစဒီနေ့နော်အဲ့ဒီဟာရာရာတို့ဒီအတွန်းရတို့ပြောရှေ့ရပ်တီသူကြည့်ရုံကလေးစဒီတော့တွန်းရတို့ဘလို့ဒီကြဲပါရင်နာဒီနေ့အဲ့နဲ့ညမပါရလားကံကရုံပါတယ်မြဲဝန်သာသာစံရဘဘထရလားကံကရှာရုံပါတယ်ဆရာရှင်အတို့ရှင်နဲ့ဒီနေ့ဆုံးလာတာဒီဒီလိုတင်တဲ့ငါကြည့်ရင်အနည်းညီတဲ့ညီတဲ့ခေါင်းထုထုကျဲနေမိတာပါစံတကောမြတာအနည်းကံကြီးချင်းစံတကောမြတာနေ့ချင်းညီတဲ့ညီတဲ့သို့ရှင်တဲ့အဲကွန်ဂူရဲဆက်ချင်းကခေစင်တီရှိစားပါရှေတော
့ So previously to tonight we've been looking at the presentation on the impermanence of life or death which is impermanence. So within this, we really looked in quite some detail about the meditation on impermanence. And this is a particularly important meditation. It's because if we have if we reflect on it repeatedly, so that we become habituated to the understanding of impermanence, so it really permeates our mind, then we'll actually have no difficulty in engaging in Dharma practice. We'll have no difficulty in engaging in purification practices, in practices which purify our mind. Furthermore, if we've really meditated in a powerful and effective manner on impermanence, then the minds of love and compassion and bodhicitta itself will be able to be generated actually with quite some ease. And once we have minds such as bodhicitta present in our continuum, then we'll be able to engage in all the various activities that are required to be of benefit to others. And we again, these various activities that we engage in to be of benefit to others, this will be something that we can engage in with relative ease. And this all comes about for independence on this meditation on impermanence. However, the meditation on impermanence doesn't only enable us to engage in practice and the development of bodhicitta in a powerful and easy manner. It also leads us to the generation of emptiness without difficulty. And emptiness, of course, is the method for eliminating the afflictive minds, for cutting the roots of suffering from our mental continuum. And so this too comes about, relatively speaking, it comes about actually quite easily if we've meditated in a powerful and effective manner on impermanence. Therefore, this meditation that we've really covered in some detail, this meditation on impermanence, is of profound importance. So now we come to the new chapter, chapter 3, page 61, on the defects of samsara. So this chapter is really about on how one engages or how one enters and remains in samsara, and this continual circling around in samsara. And then it also looks at the essenceless nature of samsara and the various sufferings within samsara.
Dine ngamzo ke di gyuchela di zemlin nali da chik gyuchisho chiyorwa mi zemlin nali gyuchisho chiyorwa Dena durwa ina da hanzo de ka ho yo maro da ro wa. Durwa ne. Semlu na ne mi gyu chu chu jor wa. Ko e gyu di ti ta ba ne hanzo de ka ho yo maro da. Ro wa. De ne ge sam da. Se da hanzo hanzo la ga ra sam go ro sne. Hanzo da ki gyu che la ya ta che ti ta re sem bi so so le ge wo ra ji ki ya wo le sam da sam de go ro wa. Je de ane di di le ya ga da semlu na ne gyu chu chu ge cha la da. अने मुझे तो जंगल आते हैं तो वो इंद्र मंजूर दी मेवा ना चीन से मेवा ना चाकू रहा ना पे पेरो दीचे पेरो
नहीं कोने के ना नहीं पे चेका हाकू चुंग ना सुने था कि कोला हाकू चुंग ये निमिष्यम पे सुमी पे मिसे पे चुप्पो या में पे मिसे पे चुप्पो ये चुप्पो
हाँ ये पे ये चुप्पो
So, in brief, what is cyclic existence? So, cyclic existence is the state where one, that comes about in dependence on contaminated karma and afflictions. So, it's the experience that comes about due to contaminated karma and afflictions. This, in brief, is what cyclic existence is. So, if we look at ourselves and our own situation, we can really observe many good qualities, such as many of us here in general, we could say, are quite healthy. We probably, as far as our life goes, things are quite good. We're happy. We have some money. We maybe have some in the bank. And we live in a nice home. Maybe we even drive an impressive car. So it's really quite easy to be look at our life and be quite comfortable and impressed with what we have. However, if we were to compare ourselves to the very rich, the wealthy, the elite in this world, actually, we don't even have the capacity to compare ourselves to them in that we have no idea really how they live their lives. They are on such a different level to us that we can't even bring ourselves to imagine what kind of enjoyments they have compared to what we have. So if we continue to think about our current situation in cyclic existence and all these good conditions that we can realistically consider that we have, when we take this view and we combine it with what we've been looking at in terms of impermanence, we'll know for sure that the good health that we may enjoy right now, this is impermanent. Our financial security that we have, this too is very impermanent. This can change at any time. Our good resources in terms of a nice car, or a car that's reliable and goes without difficulty, this we know is also impermanent, and this too can change very easily. So everything that we have is really in this precarious state, and it's not at all reliable. However, if we then look on the other side to the state of liberation or the state of Buddhahood, then that is again a situation so completely different from what we can experience and we can relate to that it can be said to be unimaginable, because the enjoyments that people who are liberated or those who have attained Buddhahood have attained are so incomparable to this precarious state that we consider a good rebirth. Likewise, we have this wish to be of benefit to others. We have a wish to be good people and to try and bring some kind of happiness into the lives of people that we care about. But when we think about how effective we are in terms of bringing happiness to others, if we're honest, we know we are actually very, very limited in what we can do to bring benefit to others. Whereas for those who have attained the state of Buddhahood, their ability is incomparable to ours. It could be said we can't even begin to imagine what ability they have, because their Buddhas have attained this state where they know the minds of others so perfectly, and they know the individual predispositions of others, that they are thereby able to help each and every sentient being in the best way possible. So here, we're really drawing comparisons between our own position and those within cyclic existence who are experiencing something incomparably better to ourselves, and likewise those who are beyond cyclic existence, those who've crossed beyond and are experiencing a state there of supreme bliss and a state of supreme power in the sense of being able to be of benefit to others. So when you think about what we consider pleasures in our life, and again we talk about the material things we have, certainly our health, financial security, loved ones and the like. When we think about that, and we think about it in relation to what the beings who have attained liberation, who have attained Buddhahood, or the liberation that is Buddhahood, we can really see that actually what we consider the enjoyments of samsara are so very temporary and so very, very unstable. And by seeing that, we need to look at it in more detail to get to the point where we see that the enjoyments, the benefits that are in samsara, these are without essence. They have no meaning. And why? Because they're not lasting, they are so unstable, and because the amount of benefit they can bring to ourselves and others is so very, very limited. So this understanding about the essenceless nature of samsara is something really that we need to try and come to in a manner that arises, so that it arises in our mind in a profound manner. Then furthermore, or to take an analogy, if, for example, there's food, certain kinds of food that we eat and we enjoy, and probably we eat quite regularly because we enjoy them, these foods, they may actually be unhealthy, they may be harming us, but especially when we're young, we don't see this, we're not aware of it. Later, we start to know a little bit more about our diet, and we may receive advice, don't eat that, it will harm you. These kinds of foods, which are very pleasurable, actually may end up harming you. So, without knowing that, we continue to go to engage in we continue to enjoy these foods that actually are harming us. However, if we have some knowledge, and we have if we have some knowledge, we will know what to turn away from, even if it's something that we consider pleasurable, and we'll know what to engage in or what foods to rather eat, because we know of the lasting benefit they'll come. So this is very similar to the position we find ourselves in with regard to samsara. If we don't know, and we don't know in a very actual profound manner, the faults of samsara, we will not know that we need to turn away from, what we will need to turn away from. And if we don't know what these faults are on a deep level, we will continue to engage in faulty behavior, in behavior that actually brings about harm. So therefore, we really need to come to know in a very profound manner the faults of samsara.
Chu 那些给他口味你没过些给些些口味你没的了呢，可能是那的，鸡蛋的了，口味鸡蛋的呀，口味动画久了，动画过什么大季节，那的呢，说说嚷嚷，那边的鸟啊、鸭啊、炖肉，那他的米些的，我的那个说说嚷嚷的呀，动画的用过，的那个动画过什么大汤，动画的些些的，鸡蛋的口味些的那些，动画的那些些，我最吃些，那的那个鸡蛋些稍微吃了呀。 鸟巴塞的那些，得了东华的那些用过来，生活这些的。那鸟啊，一大些的那些，得出来东华的那些用过来生活这些。那炖肉些的那些，得出来呀，那东华的那些用过来些的。那我就没了呀，没当他了呀，那点着的，得出来东华的那些用过来些的。我在东华的个，给人家用过来就些个，那些多的些个，这些多几些吧。可以，那东华就三八的，按起来。
So we first start by looking at the faults of samsara in general, so a general overview of the faults of samsara. So here the exhortation is to listen in the same manner as we were listening before. So you remember right at the start of the text we spoke about the qualities of the students and how to, even before that, how to listen to teachings. So we had the faults of the vessel, the three faults of the vessel and the like. So recall that to mind and listen with an attentive mind and a mind taking these teachings to heart as personal instruction. So now we come to the actual presentation. So we have two divisions, and the first is the sufferings of samsara in general, and then we'll come to the sufferings of the individual realms. And so we'll start there looking at the hell realms, then the that of the pretas or the hungry ghosts, the animal realms, and then we'll move from the suffering migrations to those of the happy migrations of gods, of humans and gods. So within each of these six migrations, we will look at the particular sufferings that the beings that are there now are experiencing, or that we ourselves all experience when we are born in such a realm. So we'll be looking at each realm in some detail, and that will be the second part of the presentation. So the first one of the earlier chapters we're looking at was, or we looked at, was that on the precious human rebirth, where we looked at the freedoms and the advantages, the 18 freedoms and advantages, and we looked at them individually in some detail, and how difficult it is actually to achieve them in terms of the vast number of causes that are required so as to attain a single precious human rebirth. And once one has attained this, we looked at their great benefits. So we've looked at that in some detail. And now, then in the second chapter, the chapter that followed that, we looked at impermanence in detail. So now, applying it to our precious human rebirth, this very existence that we have now, this is changing momentarily. From one moment to the next, we are approaching our own death. And that our own death is definite, this is something there can be no dispute about. And again, the time of our death, this is something that is very, very uncertain. But that time of death, whenever it may be, whether it's just a few breaths away, a few weeks, months, or years away, that time of death is being approached moment by moment. So this precious human rebirth that we've managed to obtain this once, this is moment by moment coming to an end. And then when our death comes, after that, it would be fine if we just died and we were extinguished. The text gives examples like a fire burning out or water evaporating. If that were to happen, then nothing to worry about. But we know that isn't the case. We will continue with rebirth. And in our present state, we'll continue with this uncontrolled rebirth. In other words, where we are born is something we don't have direct control over. Or another way to put it, when our death comes, we will continue to be reborn in samsara. We will continue to circle in this uncontrolled manner in samsara. So again, what is cyclic existence or samsara? This is the state where one's rebirth, this is the state where one is under control of contaminated karma and afflictions. That is what cyclic existence is. It's this experience where we are, this experience of being under the control of contaminated karma and afflictions. So therefore, if we die before we manage to abandon our contaminated karma and afflictions, then wherever we are born within samsara, we will continue to encounter problem after problem after problem. Just like we do in this very life, we meet one obstacle after another in every aspect of our lives. So this process will continue again and again, no matter where we are born. If we continue to have a good rebirth like we have now, or even those more fortunate ones, those with even greater happiness of the gods and the like, or those rebirths of tremendous suffering of the hell realms or the preta realms or the animal realms, wherever we are born, we will experience suffering after suffering after suffering. And it can be said that the suffering that pours down on us like rain in this unceasing manner. And why? Because it all arises from these same causes, this contaminated karma and afflictions. So this can be likened to a car wheel. So a car wheel can only go around. It's nothing else it can do. So if you're driving, that the wheel of the car turns around and around and around, and other than going around, it can do nothing. The car may turn onto a different road, but the wheel itself continues to turn. And this is the same position that we are in. And so as long as we remain in this position where we are under the control of our contaminated karma and our afflictions, we are like this car wheel, this car tire, that just turns and turns and turns no matter what road or rebirth it's in. It just turns unceasingly, and it's in a manner that it has no control over. So the way out of this, of course, is to cut the cause of this of our accumulation of contaminated karma and affliction. If we do that, then liberation is attained, and we are free from this position that we find ourselves in now, this uncontrolled position. So, but that is the only method to actually be liberated from this position of suffering we find ourselves in now.
Mm-hmm.
So the text gives an analogy here. We can liken our position to being like a fly or a small insect trapped inside a pot. And that insect, wherever it goes, whether it's up, whether it's down, whether it circles around or goes to this side or that side, it cannot escape. It's trapped inside this container. If it flies to the top or flies to the bottom, there is no escape. It remains stuck inside there. And this is very similar to us in our current position, where we are so controlled and that we can say we have been trapped or enslaved by our contaminated karma and afflictions. So all that may change for us is the realm may change, or our rebirth may change from a human to another human or a god or to an animal. This may change. But what doesn't change is we continue to meet problem after problem. We continue to encounter suffering after suffering. And in fact, whilst the strength of the suffering may change, all we are encountering is actually suffering after suffering. So whilst we are in this kind of position, we find ourselves in this position where we haven't been able to escape being controlled by our contaminated karma and afflictions. We continue to take this uncontrolled rebirth again and again and again. And of course, it's not just myself, it's not just everyone in this room, it's all beings who are suffering within samsara. And so all beings that are suffering in samsara actually are in this same position. So we continue to take rebirth after rebirth, continue to build, to encounter other sentient beings. And with this rebirth after rebirth, actually, we've continued to have new mothers, new fathers in each and every single life. So with this process being repeated since beginning this time, we actually find ourselves now in a position where if we were to look around in samsara, each and every single being without exception, we have had a mother-child relationship, a father-child relationship. With every single being, sentient being, we have been close to them. We have been indifferent towards them, or we've had a relationship of hostility towards them. So every sentient being, without exception, we've had those relationships with, including ourselves. In previous lives, I would have been your parents, you would have been my parent, we would have been friends in a different lifetime, we would have met again in another lifetime and not got on, and in other lifetimes we would have had no close encounter and we would have been indifferent to each other. And now in this life again, we have met once again and we now have a good relationship. But as we continue in this process of uncontrolled rebirth, this will again change, and in future lifetimes, whatever, we don't know what relationship we'll have, that will continue to change. So there's not a single sentient being that we haven't had a close relationship with, whether as someone we don't get on with, or someone that we have a relationship of family, or a loving relationship, or an indifferent relationship. All beings without samsara, throughout samsara, we have had these relationships with.
So
as the text says, we in 62, page 62 at the second paragraph, so if we were to try and count all our mothers since beginningless times, and we were to make, I think they say a juniper berry, make it, so I guess it's a very small berry, and make a little clay seed, or a clay ball that size, and we were to pile them all up, so this sentient being has been my mum, that sentient being has been my mum, the pile of these little clay balls would be huge, it would be larger than the world itself. And that's, this analogy just goes to show how all sentient beings, no matter where they are in samsara, we have had this kind of close relationship with them. So there's a quote from Nagarjuna. We would run out of earth trying to count our mothers with balls of clay the size of juniper berries. So this again, it's just to emphasize this close relationship we have with each and every sentient being in whichever realm they find themselves right now. So, of course, in previous lives we weren't always human beings. We've taken a vast variety of rebirths. We could have been born as animals, such as goats and the sheep and the like, and experienced their sufferings and being killed in those kind of rebirths, had our limbs cut off, etc., and by other people and the like. So that for sure would have happened to us in the past, in the same way that it happens to other beings right now. And likewise, we ourselves would have been the perpetrators in other lifetimes. We ourselves would have been those who were killing others, those who were harming others. Because there's not all these kinds of experiences throughout samsara are things that we too have experienced.
And like the
illustration given in the text here, if we were just to take the rebirths that we've had as insects, and to look at the harm that we were caused in those lives, say of our wings being pulled off, our limbs being separated from us whilst alive, these corpses and these limbs and these wings, if they're piled up just from ourselves in those previous rebirths, that huge pile would be bigger than the world itself. And again, so this analogy is just to illustrate just how many rebirths we've had in so many very different states.
So
So, of course, in this life we've experienced sufferings directly, again and again, as we have throughout our previous lives. And we've been hungry, we've been thirsty, we've experienced really suffering after suffering. Cold, when of course we haven't had sufficient clothing or shelter, depending on whatever of these various rebirths we've had. And if in those instances, of course, we express our suffering, we cry, we wail from all this pain. And if just the tears that we have cried since beginning this lifetime were somehow grouped together, they would be greater, that those tears would be greater than the amount of water in all the oceans. And so similarly, without doubt, ourselves, we would have also been born in the hell realms, the same places where other beings are suffering now. And like them, we would have experienced those sufferings too. So the text says, in those rebirths where we were forced to drink molten metal and the like, if just that, the molten metal from those rebirths was somehow all gathered together, then that amount of molten metal that we ourselves as individuals have drunk through those rebirths, that would be greater than all the oceans combined. So really, since beginning this time, we've really experienced throughout samsara just suffering after suffering, problem after problem. Now, these sufferings we've experienced in our previous lives, whether as humans or in other realms, we have no recollection of these. We don't remember them, we've completely forgotten them. But it's because we have completely forgotten about them, and we have relatively comfortable conditions right now, and because we don't really understand this essenceless nature of samsara, we actually continue to engage in acts motivated by desire and motivated by attachment, thinking that actually samsara is okay, not really understanding the position we're in and the position we have been in. So again, all these problems that we've experienced in our previous rebirths, whether as humans or animals, or in the hell realms, we have no recollection of them. And most of these problems, especially of other realms, we haven't seen, or even problems that other beings, in other human beings experience, human beings who have a very different life from ours. Again, we have no experience of them, we haven't seen them, we don't even think about them, and we can't really relate to them. So because of this not recollecting, this not really having thought about our current situation, and our past situations, we sit here thinking that actually samsara is okay. The essenceless nature of samsara, and the essence nature of samsara in the sense of how we meet problem after problem after problem, this is something that doesn't arise clearly in our mind. And because of that, it is so difficult for us to give up attachment. We're in the desire realm, and we're in this desire realm because of our strong attachment, and this attachment that is so very difficult for us to give up. And it's because of the strength of our attachment that we continue to engage in activities that perpetuate the circling of samsara. So therefore it's imperative that we start to think about the faults of cyclic existence, and we start to see that the cyclic existence itself has no essence. Because if we don't think like this, it will be impossible, it is impossible to attain liberation. In other words, it is impossible to break this wheel. It is impossible to break this repetitive nature of uncontrolled rebirth after uncontrolled rebirth, problem after problem, suffering after suffering. We have this opportunity now of having attained a precious human rebirth, a rebirth that was so very difficult to attain. To bring all those causes together was so difficult it could almost said to be impossible. But we have attained that. And so with this opportunity, if we use it well, we will be able to break this cycle. If we don't, we will just continue to perpetuate this psychic existence. This wheel will continue to turn, and we will not be able to break this pattern of meeting problem after problem after problem.
Sunam saje den lalu ya ji li wong bo jie jin xia da chang ba xia da dang zu yu ruo de zu dang ne ji ben jue qing bo da be ji shi wo ga mi jin ne ha qi ra ge lan na de jia ne xia ba du bo ba ya di ya xue de ruo zhi san de ne ji yin bei ne ya ne de guang zu guo men yan men ji xue ma jie ba ji yu mo mo ma ba ba xi wei yin na ne ni me ji xin xi yu de zhi san yu mo mo ma ba xi song wei yin na
你就可完了,你可以念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念念 So we looked at again in some detail in the previous two chapters, or the chapter two previously, when we looked at the precious human rebirth, how the main cause for a precious human rebirth, or a rebirth as a human or a god, is ethical conduct, is guarding ethical conduct. And so of course many beings have done that, they have good human rebirths, or they're reborn as gods. Or even within our human realm, there are many people who you could almost say live as well as gods, they have really fantastic external conditions. However, no matter how good the conditions any individual has, those enjoyments that they have, they are temporary. And they come about from contaminated causes, which means that their nature is suffering, and that they are impermanent, and they will end. So, no matter how good our conditions are, we will die, and these good conditions will be lost. And if in this life we haven't managed to abandon our afflictions or cut the root of our afflictions, we will continue to circle and circle in samsara. This perpetuation that we have been stuck in will continue. And so we In fact, we could liken the situation that ourselves and many people find themselves in is like someone enjoying a very pleasant dream. And in this pleasant dream, everything that they desire, or many things they desire, they have. But at one point, this dream ends, and all those enjoyments are gone. And this, too, will happen to us. At one point, our life will end. All these pleasures that we have now will be over. And all that will matter is this, the virtue that we have accumulated or the non-virtue that we haven't purified. This then is all that we can take to our future lives and all that will influence our future lives. So now we're right at the bottom of page 62, the very last two lines. Whoever, everyone in this world, of course, or everyone, all beings in psychic existence, they will meet death, they will die. So whether it's someone who has fantastic conditions, who's very wealthy, has great power, and everything that one could want, that person has, they will die, they will meet their death. Likewise, someone who's very poor, who's powerless, who's really under the control of others, who's easily harmed and at the mercy of others, this person too will die. And both of them, when they meet their death, they will go to the next life with nothing, nothing from this life. All that they will have to propel or to accompany them on their virtue is, accompany them to their next life, will be the virtue they've accumulated and the negativity that they haven't purified. So in this regard, there's actually no difference between the greatest and the most powerful and those who are the most destitute and the most wretched. When death comes, they really are in the same position. And so, and we could, in the text, it draws analogies with the great gods, beings who experience happiness and pleasures that we can't even imagine. So when they die, if they too haven't managed to cut the root of their afflictions, they will continue to be reborn in cyclic existence. And almost certainly they would not have created the necessary causes to continue with such a good existence, which means they will almost certainly take a rebirth that is lower and or worse than the one that they have now. So this is certain, and this will happen really to every single being who doesn't liberate themselves from cyclic existence. So here we need to be aware that, so a second point now, a point to be aware of, is that whatever good minds we have, virtuous minds we have, our minds of faith, minds relating to the Dharma and the like, these are not stable. So whatever we have managed to cultivate in terms of our good qualities and our habitual virtuous minds, these are not stable. So we need to keep cultivating them and strengthening them.
Then 也会讲讲，几乎讲讲，那个俺们除了国外吃上，那人不讲讲，也不讲讲，弄国外的，电话讲讲的是。俺提了他把三级国防写的，他说他把三级国防托把伊呢，等等，第二年他把，哎，年纪有限，俺那呀，闲聊，他不讲就住酒店，他第二年子他把当三级国防你不得的，也不，就是。
So the person who's able to reflect in detail on this essenceless nature of samsara, in particular, not just the sufferings of samsara, but the pleasures of samsara, how all of these are alike in being essenceless, such a person has the ability to attain liberation themselves. And so the person who does attain liberation and manages to free themselves from this continuous circling in samsara, where we just meet problem after problem after problem, such a person will only experience happiness. Such a person will only have good conditions in their lives. And if we look at one step higher, to the person who has attained the state of Buddhahood, then their happiness, their bliss in their mind, is even greater than that. In fact, it could be said, is incomparably greater to the being who has attained individual liberation. So we have two objects to look at here. On one hand, we really need to look at samsara and see how the so-called happinesses of samsara and the sufferings of samsara, all of this samsara in its entirety, is essenceless. And then in conjunction with this, we need to look at the state of liberation, the state of Buddhahood, and see those great benefits that are attained by the beings who attain liberation and Buddhahood, freedom from the suffering state.
ji 你了解的，你很讨厌的，他不能得了呀。那都这辈子，辈子这些，嗯，这些，辈子这些，怎么办呢？那你解决住吧，那，那都是那那罗你们解决，你解罗解决，你解，等你解完的了，他妈的话，那解完，你把松柏西吧，等你都是现在搞这么几类啊，那，他把这些的，他，然后他们这些没搞，上有搞不通住的，你他把那，等你咋的，先来。 判断解脱过来，让人家讲有嘛的，第二张，俺这里啊，科瓦的嘞，宁波那边什么样的样的什么当，第二个当俺这个叫了牛毛节，或者牛毛的，但科瓦的节的牛毛忘记过了哇，其实俺叔叔给牛毛的嘛，没办法讲，叔叔没办法说，没办法说，都是讲的呢，讲们家这南米大包讲，第二，米给主帮个主人的也送米大包什么当，第二大米都别什么当，都是讲帮我，讲么呢，那讲他们这里块。 牛毛把的没法吃，那可能跟他的吃过，比他们跟我说，那做那做叔叔牛毛旁个的，没办法，没办法送过来。现在的没办法送，虽然嘞跟你说了是没大把什么大，但是大没什么大，但都是呢，但是咱们年纪高，都是这位呢，俺这牛毛把的没法吃出过来。现在的牛毛把没法吃的，叫我起码的嘞，俺呢，哎，他这牛毛没法吃呢，这就没这个投资过来。现在的牛毛把的没法帮忙，都把那叫我起码的嘞。
So this current position that we all find ourselves in, this position where we entrapped within inside cyclic existence, this is a position where we find, where we meet problem after problem, suffering after suffering. It's a relentless process of one problem after the next. On the other hand, those who have managed to liberate themselves from this position, those who have attained individual liberation or actual Buddhahood, all they experience is happiness. So ourselves, everyone in this room, everyone in this world, only wants to experience happiness, doesn't want to experience even the slightest suffering. There's really no difference at all. No difference at all between beings in this way. Everyone only wants to experience happiness. But we, those of us, this large quantity of us, well, large number of us in samsara, we only actually experience suffering. Even if we call it happiness, it is in its nature suffering. Whereas those who have managed to liberate themselves from this position, they have attained what we ourselves want. They have lasting happiness. And they experience only happiness. So this is what we want to achieve. And when we think about it, we have the ability to achieve it. What is this ability we have? We have this basis, this precious human rebirth. We have an understanding of the Dhamma. We have access to the teachings. And we have an understanding of the path. So with this basis, with this knowledge, all that is required to separate ourselves from this current state of suffering is to continuously apply effort, to continuously apply ourselves to the correct method. And slowly, slowly, with these unstable, virtuous minds that we have, to strengthen them and make them more powerful and slowly more stable and more dominant in our minds. And as we slowly start to strengthen these virtuous minds we have, we will see how we're progressing along the path, of course, towards Buddhahood and towards liberation. But we'll see in the immediate term, we'll see happiness arising in our mind, and that happiness being more stable and being more powerful and being more present. And that is the guide, or the guide to show, the signs along the road showing us that we are on the right path, we are heading in the right direction. Our practice of the path is bringing us results. And as we continue to progress like this, not only will our problems start to be reduced in the sense of how we relate to what we encounter in the world, we will also, our ability to be of benefit to others, this will grow. So our own happiness will increase, the difficulties we have will decrease, and our power, our ability, this will grow. So if we continue to think in this way, we'll see that the method that we need to engage in is to follow the path as it's being presented. Take this basis we have, think about impermanence, think about selflessness, and if by thinking about impermanence in detail will lead us to the understanding of dependent arising, the understanding of emptiness and selflessness and the like. So through thinking in this way, we will be able to abandon our own afflictions and thereby reduce and eventually cut our own suffering, and we will have the ability to attain individual liberation if that is our wish. And if we have the wish to be of lasting benefit to others and bring real happiness to others, then not only will we be able to cut our own afflictions, we will be able, through practicing the path, we will be able to generate this beautiful mind of bodhicitta. And with this mind of bodhicitta and this basis of love and compassion, we will be able to bring happiness not just to ourselves, but to those in our circle, those that matter us, those that are close to us, and beyond that, all those that we encounter, whether we experience closeness with them right now or not, actually that mind will come, and we will be able to bring benefits to every single being that we encounter, both directly and indirectly. So all of this comes from this basis of, or from this position we find ourselves in now, of thinking about suffering, thinking about the nature of samsara, and thinking about this position we are in right now. So coming to understand the position we are in now with wisdom. And because if we understand the position we are in right now with wisdom, then suddenly the attachments, the enjoyments of this life will no longer bind us and control us. And rather we'll start progressing towards a state where we are no longer controlled by minds like attachments, but a state freed of that.
Then 내가 뭐
So to take a famous verse from the Master Shantideva, but apply it to this situation. So we remember how Shantideva spoke about how the world is covered in thorns, and to try and sweep away all these thorns is an impossible task. There's no way one can sweep away all the thorns. Rather, if one just wears shoes, then wherever one goes, those thorns will not be able to harm us. So this actually can be related to the situation or the situation we find ourselves in now. So in terms of whilst we're in cyclic existence, wherever we go, whatever we encounter, every experience is suffering. Just like someone who's walking in a field full of thorns, a never-ending field full of thorns, every step they take just results in pain. And some steps may be more pain, some steps less pain, but every step itself is painful. So just like that, that can be likened then to our current situation. Now we have a method, we have a way out of this, and that is to meditate on the minds of loving kindness, to meditate on the minds of emptiness. Because if we meditate in this way, we will be able to reduce our afflictions and eventually cut them. Furthermore, we will generate a warm and kind heart towards others. We will want to only benefit others. We will have no wish to harm others. So therefore, through meditating on minds such as patience, then the opposite minds of anger and minds of harmfulness, these will start to weaken and lose their strength and lose their control over us. And we'll no longer respond to situations with this habitual anger, but rather we'll just have love and kindness arise within our minds. So this can come about. It will come about to us developing this habituation, strengthening these virtuous minds that we have, making them more stable, making them more powerful. And as we do that, it will be likened to someone putting on shoes and walking into a thorny field. Those thorns will no longer be able to harm them. Likewise, the afflictions and the difficulties we encounter right now, those same situations will not harm our mind, because we have developed protection of our mind. We have developed an understanding of emptiness. We have developed minds of love and compassion. And therefore, whomever and whatever we encounter within samsara actually can no longer harm us anymore, because these minds that are contrary to the experience of samsara are growing in strength in us. And therefore, this whole presentation we have right now on suffering and then the nature of samsara is incredibly important, because it's an indispensable building block to the development of these minds of love, compassion and wisdom.
Kupan kupa
So sorry, this was a story I hadn't heard before. So Aryadeva, he was cleaning a dirty pot, and inside the dirty pot was dirty water. And so a non-Buddhist teacher came up to him and said, "What are you doing?" So Aryadeva said, "Oh, I'm cleaning the dirty water inside." But of course, he's cleaning the dirty pot with the dirty water still inside. So the non-Buddhist teacher said to him, "Well, that's really stupid. You're not going to clean the dirty water by cleaning the outside of the pot. Rather, you just let the water settle, and the dirt will fall to fall to the bottom of the water, and then you can pour out the clean water." So Aryadeva then said, "Well, this is the same mistake that you make in your religious practice. And you think that by washing in the Ganges River, you will actually just wash away your negativity. You'll purify yourself of negativity, when all you're doing is you're cleaning the outside of your body or the outside of the container. You're doing nothing to clean the inside or to clean the mind. What one needs to do, if one wants to purify, is to change the mind, to develop the mind, to purify the mind. It's only through meditation, so through this cultivation of virtuous minds and the purification of the non-virtuous minds, that one is able to purify what's inside the vessel or purify the mind itself." So similarly, as we reflect on the suffering nature of samsara, everything that we encounter in samsara is in its nature suffering, then we'll come to see that actually the suffering really pervades samsara. Everywhere we go, wherever we are born, whatever we encounter, we only meet suffering. And when we come to see this, of course, the mind can feel a bit helpless, maybe even frustrated. What can I do? Everywhere I go, everything I meet, whatever we try within samsara, it just has this essenceless nature. There is no lasting happiness. Everything has arisen due to the causes of contaminated karma and afflictions. And therefore, this samsara in its nature is suffering. So there's actually about samsara itself, there's nothing we can do in the sense that we can't remove all the suffering from everyone. What can be done is that we can change our own mental state so that wherever we go, whomever we meet, whatever we do, our mind is always happy, our mind is always stable, our mind is always peaceful and powerful. This is the state of liberation. This is the state where our mind is not encountering problems with whatever it encounters, but rather with whatever situation one encounters, one remains peaceful, one remains happy, one remains mentally powerful. This is the state of liberation. So how to attain the state of liberation? Again, this it comes through applying this path that we're studying here. So first of all, meditating on impermanence, and meditating on impermanence in a profound and detailed way. So we're looking at the certainty of death, we're looking at the uncertainty of the time of death, we're looking at momentary change, we're looking at how even the so-called pleasures in samsara, these change momentarily, so therefore they're of no essence. We look at how everything that is impermanent changes momentarily, and we look at how all phenomena are in their nature selfless. So in this way, we come to see, through this meditation on impermanence, we come to take huge steps towards individual liberation, we take huge steps towards this realization of emptiness, and these are the tools we need to attain liberation ourselves. So, again, what we need to emphasize on is meditation on the path, in particular these meditations on, relating to impermanence.
Mm-hmm. Then in the Diringi, Mazuki, Lapjati, Kuriki, Duma, some to Duma, the Jibu, to Shiand, that in Egi, to some Daji, that Ningbo, that Jig, Kuri, Chukanishin, that Ningbo Sky, Minos, and Big Samuel Star, the name that Mazuki is in the Midab, you call Mawashawa, that in Egi, that you are Midabar, some da, the Nigi, that Shina, that Pay, Chit Madame Yavanza, that Dinaji, and to get up. Dunga dile thayad thabada thamjee kienpa to goba thobna de digi ki di na digi yonwa zangadu di gogoore di inzaada ngadu nyine nyine ya ane ngewa mige jubong ki tsutim digi sunyata ngewa diye gang mangma jetu yata ane digba semba gang sangbo gang yaya jetu yata dene digba digi ane ma yun du samda du sam da gaje to ngadu samna lo ya gaje samna nala samna gyuwa taa yadrit wada Some of the Yahad Commissary, the Duchin Commissary, Nine to do some dietic, let Ben Jambata, there were, then Niju Comiata, the Nate Mitabu or some dieta, and Gabriel Tombani or some dieta, Duchinia, just Lucia, some Dawena, and Nine in it, Goya, Rura, the Commissi, Succession Rura, the Namanjogi, the Nigi, and Jacobu, Sebeda, and Dina de la Chatia Tire, that they see. Jesus Shivala Sunya Dang and Lobo Aya Deva Sunya Dishan, Sembo Yua Dangin, Sembo So Yua Dangin, and the Yidubuli, Saji, Disumudu, Yinzanganjida, Sembo Kanga Sayada, Sembo Divi Chola Gazette, Roto Dujan, the Komshi, the Lalan Dai, the Redua Dangan.
So today we've been looking at, we've of course been looking at the sufferings of samsara, and in particular how within samsara all phenomena have no essence. So whatever is considered samsaric phenomenon has no essence, it has no ability to bring about lasting happiness. So previous to tonight, we've been looking at in some detail at the presentation on impermanence, and there we also saw how at the time of death, all that matters is Dharma. It's the minds, the virtuous minds we've cultivated, and the negative minds that we've purified. This is what influences our future lives, and then the merit that we have accumulated that we can take to future lives. So therefore, in our life now, it's our application and development of the Dharma minds that is of crucial importance. So we all here, without exception, we only want to experience happiness. And we've seen again tonight about the state that is truly happy, and that's the states of liberation or the states of Buddhahood. Those are the states where the happiness is stable, it's permanent. The happiness that one has there doesn't depreciate depreciate moment by moment by moment. That happiness lasts. So this is the state that we should be striving for. We should be trying to achieve, because this is really what we want, this lasting happiness, not this current position we're in, where we meet problem after problem after problem. So the method to achieve this is again something we know. And to put this in brief, it's about developing our mind. It's about accumulating virtue and purifying non-virtue. It's about changing the way we think, developing the way we think, changing our outlook. So as we develop minds of love, minds of compassion, and we strengthen our understanding of impermanence, our own happiness will improve, because our afflictions, the strength of our afflictions are being reduced, and our virtuous minds are being strengthened. So slowly we strengthen our habit of thinking in a virtuous way, we strengthen these habitual virtuous tendencies, we strengthen these, we will have minds of compassion more present within us. So when we meet difficult circumstances, the mind of compassion is already there and it will arise. The understanding of impermanence, if we've been developing this, will naturally arise because we've become habituated with it. So then when someone talks to us in an unpleasant manner, immediately the mind of impermanence will ripen for us, and we will not grasp at what is being said because we will understand impermanence. Likewise, the minds of love and compassion will be present, and we will relate to that person with this understanding of love and compassion. So it's really in this way that we start to experience happiness now, and we start to move towards these exalted states of liberation and Buddhahood. So this here, of course, isn't something that I think that I've made up. We had analogies presented to us tonight by great masters of the past, Shantideva and Aryadeva. And in essence, what they're saying is improve your mind, take care of your mental state, develop the way we think and we relate to whatever we encounter. This is the path. So then next time we'll continue with the particular sufferings experienced by the beings of the six realms. So, some questions tonight. Okay, then thank you very much.
Sure.